At Audi Columbus, luxury meets convenience. Family-owned since 1897, we've built our reputation on trust, transparency, and innovation. Browse our selection online and complete your purchase from home. Then simply stop by to pick up your keys.
Drive home a new 2025 Audi Q6 e-tron for $499 for 36 months with $5,295 down.
The next generation shops online. Experience the future with us at AudiColumbus.com. Buyers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
See dealer for details. Offer ends 9/30/25.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Well, it just gets more and more exciting in the case against Karen Reed. Joining me to discuss the latest developments, at least as of our recording, Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent. We were watching Mr. Wolf on the stand here the last handful of days, Friday into the new week. And, well, that's the expert witness for the defense. What?
Are you sure?
What is going on here? Did they not pay their bill or something? Because it seems like we're living in a parallel universe where somehow this is supposed to help the defense after they demonstrate time and time again how even a lesser weighted arm would shatter the taillight pretty much precisely like the one that John O'Keefe's arm hit on the back of Karen Reed's SUV, allegedly, with a very similar shatter pattern to all of the plastic, even though it wasn't in like the 20s or 30s outside. Jennifer, what the hell are we watching here?
It's been really something. And so many people now that they've been able to see this mm-hmm. and understand that, indeed, an elbow can shatter that plastic glass that was over that taillight. Mm-hmm. Indeed, it would throw a body. He even showed the pirouette that the poor trooper Paul was made fun of for his, you know, assertions. And then he shows how that would happen.
Yeah.
It's just been really eye-opening. And for an engineer to say things like mass doesn't matter, we'll just increase the speed. You know, mm-hmm. if I want to get a different result, I'll just change another variable instead of doing it right. 40, yes. 24 miles an hour, he said, well, I'll go with 29 and change the weight of the arm. Mm-hmm. Who does that? That's an engineer or a physicist or anyone that relies on these very precise measurements.
Well, especially when they're trying to demonstrate something visually. This wasn't just on paper, what will these numbers equal? I get how that makes sense, but that's not what we're looking for here. The main thing everyone was looking for is, will this taillight shatter at X speed with X weight of arm? And they certainly proved it will over and over again, except for when they had the suspended hanging arm in the middle of the air, which I was like, why did you even attempt this one? Why would you rig this up and spend the time doing it? Because it proves absolutely nothing in the larger scheme of things. I found that to be odd. Overall, what are you thinking of the testimony of the experiments that they did? Again, yeah, like you were saying, this is a very precise thing they're looking for. They didn't seem to be all that precise in their actual testing of the dummy, although, I mean, it did show pretty much what the defense doesn't want it to show.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And Tony, one of the biggest, to me, points that was made right off the bat by Brennan on cross-examination was, now, didn't you fail your practical application part of your examination to become an accident reconstructionist? Yes, I did. You know, there are engineers and people that are very good at doing math and passing class. And, you know, we've all seen it. Mm-hmm. And then there are those that can practically apply different notions into what happens to somebody at a crash site. And not only did he fail, he made fun of it. And in other words, fun of the fact that they would be testing him on something so quote unquote elementary. And I think it made him look very pompous to the jury. And that was just off the bat. And then for him then to illustrate and for them to see, as you said, over and over again, exactly the Commonwealth's position on what happened. Obviously, chaos theory is going to never have anything be the same each time. Mm-hmm. You could put John O'Keefe there and have her back into him at 24 miles an hour, 100 different times, and there's going to be slight differences 100 different times. But boy, he sure did make it come alive.
Yeah, he did. Was that intentional? Did he, when you put this together, I mean, I'm just trying to get my mind wrapped around how this even made it into the courtroom. Obviously, he did his testing. They get to see it in discovery. I mean, everybody knew what was going to be coming to light that day, including the defense of Karen Reed. Why on earth would you say, yeah, let's have him show this stuff. Let's go through all this. Why wouldn't you just be like, thanks. Anyway, we'll pay your bill, but we're not going to use you. Is it just use him because you paid for him and then hope that the prosecution doesn't get their hands on him as well, or what? Because this was like the nail in the coffin, I think a lot of people feel, to Karen Reed's whole defense.
Well, there's a couple of theories, right? Number one, could they believe, and I believe this theory, that the prosecution was going to put it up anyway on rebuttal through their defense or through Welcher, their crash reconstructionist. Because remember, the Commonwealth just got all this information, all this testing, all these videos. And after they got it, their expert has been, you know, chewing it up and looking at it. And of course, we're going to see him on redirect, even though the defense, or I mean on rebuttal, even though the defense put in a motion not for the CW not to have any rebuttal on this, citing case law that didn't support their position. And of course, they're obviously the rebuttal is coming in. So I wondered if they were trying to get ahead of that. And then, do you remember this, Tony? Do you remember when he says, by the way, what's that clip that stopped right there? And he said, oh, that was just a false run. Or, you know, that was kind of a run and we decided not to include it. That really jumped out to me, Tony. In other words, you're hiding 100 calls, you're using the Signal app, and you actually did a different experiment that you're now calling a false run. But you wanted them to see this run. Imagine what the other run might have had.
Or did the false run not have anything on it? I don't know at this point, because it doesn't make any sense that you'd be running with these things if you're trying to defend Karen Reed. Can you explain to me, because I try to, you know, be out there in the Twitter sphere and understand what the hell people are thinking and saying on both sides of this. And again, it's very tribal on both ends, even after Friday and even after here Monday, where we're seeing the continuation of the cross, where both sides are really saying, see, this proves she didn't do it. How is this showing that she didn't do it? Can you wrap your mind around that one and try to explain it to me if possible? Because I don't get how anyone's walking away from this going, oh yeah, this proves more innocence than guilt.
Well, what they're saying is, the people who are still defending Karen Reed, is they're saying, see, at the end of the day, this expert, and they always like to say hired by the FBI, which is also false. It was the Department of Justice, the attorneys. But they're saying that, and just what Wolf said at the end, yeah, I don't think they're consistent. You know, he likes to use that word consistent because it's the most general term anyone can use. What does that mean? It's not exact. It's not consistent. And so they're saying, see, at the end of the day, this, you know, high dollar expert says they're not consistent. And so they're sort of forgetting the entirety of the facts and just going with one statement. See, he still says it's not consistent. Like, you're supposed to believe him out and just not believe your own eyes.
Well, what's not consistent here? I mean, obviously, they had the dummy tethered. He couldn't move, so that played a big role in it. But it certainly showed an arm of even in lesser weight could destroy the taillight exactly the way it did. They did different tests at different speeds, so they're all going to be have different consistencies because they all have different factors in them. What's inconsistent? I don't quite see what's inconsistent here.
Well, this is something they really keyed in on.
Uh-huh.
So his clothing is cut up, right? The
yeah.
real John O'Keefe has holes in his clothing, and everybody wanted to know how that would happen. Well, in the crash dummy, he also had holes in his clothing.
Yeah.
But they weren't the exact same holes.
Of course they're not going to be.
No. And Tony, this was the killer. They did everything on asphalt. He blew into a yard of grass
yeah.
and has grass stains. And they went over that. See, there was road rash on the dummy, but there wasn't road rash on John O'Keefe. I'm like, well, he flew into a yard.
Yeah.
He didn't fly into asphalt. Like you're everything about their experience.
Mm-hmm.
Is 5'9" and of average weight. John O'Keefe is in the 95th percentile,
mm-hmm.
200 and I think they said 17 pounds or something like that. At 6'1", he's a big guy.
Yeah.
And for them to try to do experiments using not the same measurements is insane. And they even focused on, Brennan did, about the shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did you buy new shirts? Well, it turns out they used a medium-sized shirt that hugged that crash dummy. He wore an extra large, and it had been worn many times.
Yeah.
It was a used shirt.
Yeah.
You know, so it would have wear and tear and cut differently. To me, their points that they tried to make just don't land. And just like they're not landing with you. You're like,
yeah.
Jen, I'm not buying that.
Well, it was hard to even see them clearly because they're, I mean, it was obviously was an explosion of information with the video itself. I mean, you didn't even have to listen to any of the testimony and you just see that like, okay. I mean, that's what's going to stick to those jurors' minds is that image of that crash test dummy or that mannequin, really, because it's not truly a crash test dummy. We learned this morning. And it shatters. It's there. And one of the biggest things to me, again, in this, and I guess that's the inconsistency, is the clothing. It didn't tear exactly the same way. It's going to do the test 50 different ways with the same dummy. You're going to have different tear patterns every single time. Is the fact that they're showing this. And yes, it's not exactly the same. No two are ever going to be the same. But it sure resembles what happened to John O'Keefe. And it's pretty much what I've been saying the whole time. It looks like somebody who, you know, flew. It looks like road rash or some sort of rash, which this time we had grass stain on hard surface with shattered pieces of plastic taillight everywhere that provided basically gravel-ish type material to cut into his clothing. And sharp pieces that cut into his clothing, embed into his clothing. None of what they have presented with ARCA seems to help Karen Reed in any way, shape, or form. Is the defense of Karen Reed just too close to the sun right now? Are they not seeing that the world outside of FKR and Karen herself is looking at this all extremely different? Because they seem to only be playing to the FKR folks who are going, yeah, that's great. While everybody else over here is like, This is not what you're saying it is. This is not the oh, you're innocent big card you were expecting to get here.
Yeah, you know, they keep taking small little indications. As an example, I think their taillight broke into 19 pieces. The mm-hmm. other taillight broke into 42 pieces. Things like that, which are easily explainable by, first of all, the fact that the CW didn't do this experiment, he specifically said he didn't want to do it because he did not know exactly where John was. He didn't know the configuration of his arms.
Mm-hmm.
And so he thought it would be too speculative. But they did it for him. And now he's going to be able to, you know, pony off of that. And the other thing that I thought was interesting, and to me, this was the aha moment. Mm-hmm. Do you remember on the video where you could see when Rescue Randy hits the light, these like teeny tiny dust-like particles come off of that tail light into Randy?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, it's a total debris field to explain. I'm not talking about the debris field on the ground, to explain how all of that debris got embedded into John O'Keefe. And Wolf tried to say, well, but if they didn't fly at the rate as fast as John O'Keefe was flying backwards, it really couldn't embed in him. I'm like, dude, look at the shirt that's in evidence. Can we just please go with brick and mortar facts that we have here? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just amazing how they sideswipe the true facts. There was a debris field. Rescue Randy had a debris field. There were microscopic pieces, or maybe not dust-like pieces, that went to John O'Keefe's clothing.
Yeah.
You know, just like that. His DNA was on there. They just refused to think about the brick and mortar facts in this case.
Well, and also it seemed to answer another question, which they weren't even trying to answer at that moment in time, was what about the cut on his eye, on his eyelid, or his eyebrow area? Well, when you saw the pieces and shards of plastic flying upwards towards his face, one might be able to garner, that's probably how that got cut. A sharp piece of plastic flying up at 20 some miles an hour or whatever speed it's flying up at and hitting flesh. That seems to answer that question, too. They literally filled in the blanks of everything that even the damn prosecution didn't do. And they were doing a pretty good job. This just like, hey, you want more facts to this? Here's chapter two. Like, what is happening here? Obviously, there's a lot of question going on right now. Who is calling the shots here? This is just pure speculation. Do you think it's his or Karen's attorneys anymore that are calling the shots? Or is Karen the one that's making all the decisions on what's going in and what's not? And they're just along for the ride at this point.
Well, you know, you say speculation, and it certainly is, but there's been two sources that I consider pretty credible, right? Mm-hmm. One is a reporter that's been in the courtroom almost all days. He's reported heavily on the case, and I do not believe he's lying about this. Mm-hmm. He said he was contacted specifically by somebody around the Karen Reed camp that said, listen, we just want everybody to know, you know, they're not calling the shots anymore. Karen is the one calling the shots. Now, why? I was trying to think, but what's the motive for really getting that out? Why are you disseminating that through the, you know, people who mm-hmm. believe that Karen Reed did this crime as opposed to the other side? You know, that didn't make a lot of sense to me, but I certainly think the call took place, and I certainly think it might make some sense. I also expected Bob Alessi, since he has handled so much of this sort of examination of mm-hmm. witnesses related to the more practical side of things, the engineering side of things, I expected him to do this direct.
Yeah.
And of course, it was said that he disagreed with them putting up those videos. I still go back to, I think the prosecution would have put the videos in on rebuttal.
Without a
maybe
doubt.
Maybe they're getting ahead of it.
Maybe they are. I mean, maybe it was their way of how the prosecution got ahead of things with the Proctor texts and had them read by his friend, which, again, that kind of walked away without much fanfare or interest. It certainly did not land in any way or shape or form the way they did the first time. And here we are. We're getting closer and closer to the end of the trial of Karen Reed number two. And it's been a very different trial thus far. We don't have her being persecuted by the police very strongly as we did in the first one. We didn't even really get into great detail yet about this party in terms of what the jury has seen. They've heard bits and pieces, but we haven't gone into the full blown and these, you know, everybody is conspiring against her and the dog did this and that. I mean, we've heard pieces, but it has not been spelled out very clearly. Are they thinking at the very end that they're going to go through and spell out the whole party theory and it's just going to land perfectly and everyone will go, oh yeah, that must be what happened despite all of this evidence over here?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, these closing statements cannot discuss what's not in evidence. I mean, that's the rule.
Yeah.
Right. So that would lend itself to say that Alan Jackson can't just get up there and spew third party culprit defenses. And this is really interesting, Tony, at least so far, I have not seen the jury instruction on third party culprit defense, which last year there was, which indicated, of course, they needed to be, you know, the jury needed to be instructed on that. So they're not even going there, which tells me they don't think that they have presented enough evidence on a third party culprit defense.
Yeah.
And they also are angry in their most recent motion that Higgins wasn't called, Albert, all these witnesses that were called last time that helped them with their third party defense weren't called. And they're saying this is basically unfair. That they were made unavailable. Well, this is the problem. They're fully available to the defense. Why doesn't the defense want to call them?
That's my question. Like, you can say it's unfair, but you could have called them yourself. Like, why didn't you call them? I think anybody that's looking at this case in retrospect is going, how did you think you were going to get her off without calling them? I mean, even if you're not going to be, you can't prove that there was this fight because I don't think it ever happened, but you at least could introduce some more fluff over on the side that might make people think, well, maybe there's reasonable doubt, but even that's not part of the equation this time. It feels like they're trying to convict Karen Reed. Like, they just had enough of her. Every time they turn the corner, she's talking to somebody else and the words that she speaks are haunting them and her. After all the hard work that they've put into this, I know that's an insane thing to think, and I don't truly believe that they're doing that. But again, too close to the sun. Are they just not seeing how this is all landing?
Well, I think they monitor closely social media. And the reason I think social media is important is it gives feedback as to what people are thinking. And there's an account that's has a YouTube channel. They're a pretty big account. They are a true crime channel. And oh my gosh, they put out, they said, wow, she did it. You know, for 2 years, basically, or extended period of time, they had been fighting in her camp. And they said, wow, after seeing that video, you know, nope, no more. And they're on my platform now, which is great.
Yeah.
Like, thank you. Because they have seen the light, if you will. And sometimes it's not that the people are necessarily dense or anything. I think a lot of people don't have time to watch this trial 8 hours every day.
Sure.
It's so much. And then, and for 2 months, by the way, we're in the 2 month window, day 29. And then all you have is the rhetoric of people and you don't know who to believe. And there's so many lawyers and officers, I'm not going to say agents, former police officers that have gone for clicks and views that have quadrupled in some cases because they went with the whole FKR nonsense. And they were people that a lot of these people trusted. And now they're like, wow, I see what happened here.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's, it's problematic when the people you really trust to present facts don't.
Yeah, it's important to stay grounded in reality, and I feel like nobody has stayed grounded in reality. I mean, Karen, I don't think has ever operated in reality, but certainly her attorneys have. And seeing her walk out of court every day, it's getting, you know, it's humorous almost, because I mean, what we saw the other week, I did a bit on it. I know you saw that where we put the Curb Your Enthusiasm music in it. But it's literally, she's shooting herself in the foot even more every time she walks out of court and says things that just don't make a whole lot of sense or contradict exactly what she said before. And again, this probably goes back to, she's calling the shots. I mean, she's like leading the charge. I've never seen this, where the defendant is out there ahead of her attorneys and she's the one, you know, basically going through the questions and fielding all of it. And the attorneys are kind of in the background like, we'll maybe say, you know, something if we need to interject, but hopefully she doesn't screw herself too much. I'd love to hear what these conversations are like behind closed doors.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, we got to hear some of them because ID Discovery did a great job of interviewing the attorneys and kind of seeing what their whole, you know, the interactions between all of them. But of course, they're under a gag order, so they can't talk. But how in the world they don't gag their client? And Tony, we should talk about, in my opinion, one of the biggest bombshells that Karen Reed said.
What's that?
Everyone on FKR has 227 shirts, 227 tags, 227. When I say tags, those things you put on your tags, that they have the banners. This has been the mantra because Jen McCabe Googled how long to die in snow, that they must have killed him, knew he was dead. I mean, this is all the leaps that they made, that she murdered him and wanted to know how long he could last out there. The whole premise from the get-go was so ridiculous, but everybody latched onto it. Over a year and a half ago, Tony, that was debunked by Ian Whiffen and Cellebrite. It was completely defunct, but you could not get people off of that. And now when they asked Karen Reed yesterday, what about the 227? You're going to bring it up? Nope. Going to put in an expert? Nope. Green's not coming up. Why? Because Ian Whiffen talked about it.
he debunked it.
Yeah. You have ruined Jen McCabe's life because of that. I cannot wait for these civil lawsuits to pour in. No matter what happens, they have to pour in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she, no matter where she ends up here, whether she is convicted of one or all of the charges or none, or it's a hung jury, whatever happens here, those civil suits are coming. She's going to be in court for a very, very long time. And there's a lot, you know, there's a lot more they can dig into in a civil suit in terms of evidence and discovery and everything that they need to find if they want to find it. And that's not going to be good for Karen. I just, gosh, all of this because a person, what it appears to be is they didn't want to be responsible for an accident. And at the end of the day, this all could have been done by now. She could have served whatever she needed to serve, maybe even nothing, and could have been on with life and everybody could have been healing and trying to move on. But instead, it's turned into this insane apocalyptic warfare land between FKR and everybody else, all based on just, I don't want to be responsible. And I'm just going to keep telling you all this and knowing damn well what happened. Do you think she knows what happened? Do you think, or do you think it's still a big brownout area? And the easiest thing for her was to simply go and say, I'm going to believe Alan Jackson and the mystery man that came in and said, look at the people in the house. And that's just where her mind went. It was easier to digest that way rather than focus on accountability for a horrible, horrible accident.
I 100% think she knows exactly what happened. Maybe not exactly from the standpoint of she was drunk. And I don't think she meant to kill him. She just meant to head him. But I think she knows she did it. And I'm going to tell you what I base that on. I base that on clear back in the day when she was arrested initially, Yannetti standing up before the court and saying, this was a horrible accident. There was no intent on the behalf of my client. My client loved him. And he said it in court and also on the courthouse stairs. You would not have that posture after talking to your client and her saying what happened. You would not have that posture if you thought somebody else murdered him.
Yeah.
So that is the basis for me believing she, good and well, and I'm not even talking about all the things she's said since then that also bolster that. But let's just go back to the beginning, Tony. It's so clear she knew.
You think Yannetti is sitting there going, see, we should have just done it my way the whole time.
Yeah, I really do. I do think that because, but if you get down to why on ID Discovery, at the very end of that docuseries, out of everything that happened in that docuseries, this is the thing that stuck out to me. She said, I could not go to jail one day. One day, 100 days, it's all the same to me. Paraphrasing, but if you go back and get that clip, that to me is why she was willing to go to these lengths and no holds barred.
Yeah. Just no regard for anybody. And is that also too part of the factor here psychologically why we have the FKR movement? Is it because people, although it doesn't make a lot of sense, in with the same argument is you look at her and you go, no one's that evil. No one would ruin all these people's lives if they knew that they did it. That's just not possible. That wouldn't be the thing. So it's easier to believe that Karen is not possibly that person. And it's just an easier world to wrap one's mind around, because otherwise you have to accept there's some pretty nefarious people out there, Karen being one of them. But at the same point, if you're to believe the theory, you're believing that there's this whole cabal of people in this town and everybody's connected to everything and everybody's all ready to conspire at the drop of a dime, because I don't know who the ringleader is, but somebody must be the ringleader that says, we're going to do this. We're going to say this and everyone must follow. That's a scarier world to live in than a borderline Karen Reed or whatever the hell she is. Acting like someone with those symptoms do. I don't know. It baffles me, because I'm trying to wrap my mind around why there's this huge divide and why people are willing to believe such nonsense.
Well, I think you make a really good point. From the people that I've talked to that knew Karen Reed and first knew Karen Reed that mm-hmm. were friends of John O'Keefe's, mm-hmm. They all say they liked Karen initially. She's one of those people, and we all know these people, that when you first meet them, they're really nice. They go overboard. Yeah. They want to buy your lunch. Mm-hmm. They shower you with gifts. One woman told me that she gave her, I think, a $400 sweater after meeting her once. Mm-hmm. They do everything to ingratiate themselves on a very surface level. And they also do a good job of keeping everybody out of the beyond surface level, right? So you only get to know this, sweet persona that is not what is below, mm-hmm. The surface.
The engine that's running it.
Oh, yeah. It was awful.
And it's called love bombing. I mean, it's typically in a relationship is where you'd see that. But folks like this, they'll do it to anybody. And that's what it is. It's oh, you're this and that. I got a very interesting email the other day. And so take it for what it is. And the person wants to be anonymous, and that's fine. But it's someone who went to school with Karen Reed. Because I've been asking, mm-hmm. what was life like? What was her personality like back then? And allegedly, according to this person, Karen's been Karen her whole life. A lot of manipulation, a lot of, there was a story, again, this is all just alleged. There was a story in there that essentially hinted that Karen, she would pick people out. And apparently one year she just kind of, she picked on one person who she kind of viewed as a threat to her popularity, whatever it may be, and just made life hell for this kid. And again, all alleged, but very much down the road of, character. If you're trying to look at the arc of the character here, it sounds very much like what a young Karen may be up to when kids are like that, and kids are petty, and kids are mean, and kids are out for themselves. It just sounds like she never really left that world of being a 14-year-old mentally.
Yeah. I always say people do not change who they are, right? Mm-hmm. What is this adage? The stripes don't change, however you want to say it. Yeah. Yes, you can be like a tree and get deeper roots, and your branches grow out and you expand. But you don't change. If you're an oak, you're an oak. Mm-hmm. And so there is no doubt in my mind, and I have similar messages that mm-hmm. have come to me, not from somebody from high school, but from somebody else mm-hmm. that was actually involved with her. And wow, it's frightening. I mean, it's the true, again, allegedly mm-hmm. bunny burner, boiler, whatever you want to call it, scenario. Total control of everybody mm-hmm. she's around. That's what we're dealing with. And we've seen it. We've seen it in court. We've seen it on the courthouse steps. We've seen it in these docuseries. Again, unless they come forward and are willing to testify, it's all just hearsay.
Yeah.
But it makes a lot of sense, Tony. And I could tell you in the FBI world, when you go with some of these con men or other people who are involved in domestic violence situations, they don't change. Mm-mm. You know, it's like you are never going to beat a woman.
No.
You know, I'm never going to come home and beat up on my husband.
Yeah.
That's how foreign it is to these people not to talk to their significant others like she talked to John on those voicemails. Mm-hmm. That's how they roll.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not in a vacuum. I mean, it's a pattern of behavior. And that's why I've been curious about this whole thing just psychologically from the beginning, because it's like, okay, this is the patterns that she's demonstrating left and right. I'm curious as to what it was like before John. And again, all allegedly, all, you know, hearsay. But you have heard, I have heard, a lot of people have heard similar stories about Karen and you know, just a way that she didn't accidentally kill somebody, but still very much acted like the Karen that we seem to know and love today. yeah.
It's Karen that gives her namesake.
Yeah.
I keep wondering which Karen came first.
I know. I mean, yeah, I mean, this is this is not helping the world of Karens out there.
No. I've had so many people named Karen on my Twitter platform say, gosh, I hate that my name is Karen right now.
Yeah.
Dude, you're not Karen. Don't you worry about it. But
yeah,
it's interesting. But back really quickly to Karen Reed and this trial. If she's convicted, I think we're going to get many more people that are willing to come forward as to her history, her 40 years of life. And the second thing I was going to say is in regard to this train or snowball, if you want to call it, that started out as a small snowball and just took life, and you're now getting your kids out of school to come watch the trial in the first era and just insanity behind this. It really became like a carnival. And I think people got swept up in that atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what happened. They were part of something, is what I'm trying to say.
And people, I mean, we strive as human beings to be part of something and want to be part of something that we believe, well, at least most of us, that we believe is good and right. And if there's an injustice going on, we want to expose it. And if you truly believe that this was an injustice, I get how one would get behind it. On the surface, it did look really shady with everything that we had heard about the police and all of that. And then we took the time as grownups to sit down and evaluate it. And the FBI evaluated it. And then we found out, oh, okay, yeah, there's certainly some stuff here that could have been done better. And some of these behaviors are pretty not great, especially when you start tying in the Birchmore case. And, you know, just it shows a weird atmosphere where it seems a lot of things are possible. But then you look at it closer and go, okay, yeah, so there's a lot of things that are possible, but are there a lot of things here that are remotely likely or things that we have facts for or don't have facts for or can disprove or prove? And it turns out the main things we can prove here are things that Karen did, not what others did to Karen Reed. And that at the end of the day, by her own admission, by the evidence that has come to light, none of this is looking like she's innocent. I don't see anything here that remotely points to innocent. The only thing I can see is that maybe she didn't intend to do it. But even that, in this case, seems to have gotten a lot thinner in skin, where, I don't know, it's not hard to punch that one open and say, yeah, I think there might have been some intent here. I don't know.
And if anybody has any questions, just go look at the ARCA video.
Yeah. At the end of the day, yeah, look at the ARCA video. Yeah, it's damning. And yeah, we'll see what is yet to come here. There's still probably, what do you think, another 2 weeks left in this?
I don't know. I think they're going to wrap up this week. And I think we're going to see closing Friday, maybe Monday. I think it's going to be certainly within the next 10 days.
Do you think it's going to be a quick jury choice where they come back with their verdict, or you think they're going to sit there for a while and have some questions? Where do you think they're sitting?
Well, I think how long they take is going to be huge indications. I think if it comes back quick, we're going to see guilty, guilty, guilty. I think the longer it protracts, it's going to be hung or guilty on only a certain number of charges. So, I hope it's quick.
I hope Bev is as clear as she possibly can be to this jury of here's what you can choose. And we don't end up with, well, we thought we could have, we didn't know that. No, here's how we do this. Come back with your answers and then we can wrap this thing up. But I have a feeling this is just going to keep going on in many ways, shapes, and forms. Maybe another criminal trial. I mean, could she be charged criminally for any of this? If at the end of the day she's found guilty and we look at what she was saying and the accusations that were made against these off, I mean, are there other possible things that she could be charged with after the fact here?
Oh, 100%. I'm waiting on bated breath to see if she's charged in the conspiracy with Turtle Boy to harass and intimidate witnesses, the witnesses mm-hmm. against her. And initially that was not indicted, but that was before they got a hold of the phones mm-hmm. and before they really looked at everything in there.
Yeah.
I'm giving that a pretty good chance of moving forward with her being indicted on those charges.
Wow. More to come in the trial of Karen Reed. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, thank you for your insight as always.
Thank you.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.